Welcome to The Competent Investor. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Today I have what I am kind of considering an Eastern Silver panel. We have Eric Young joining me at Just Dario, and as well London Paul from The Sirius Report. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks a lot. My pleasure.
So I wanted to get all of you together today to talk about silver, what's happening in the silver market from, you know, recent margin raises, contracts standing for physical delivery, the new Samsung, you know, we can kind of call it the battery bombshell that has recently dropped, and even an ounce of silver being more valuable than a barrel of oil, something that's only happened one other time in history. So, you know, there's so many of these developments that keep happening within the silver market. I think it's really valuable to be able to break it down to try to understand many different pieces. As Eric mentioned in our kind of pre-chat here today, there are so many different pieces that are necessary to understand as a complete picture that's happening in the silver market. But maybe we could start by discussing the idea that there have been large contracts on the COMEX and other exchanges as well, but mostly the COMEX, it seems, that are trying to physically settle for delivery. There's been something like 7,330 silver futures contracts, or the equivalent of 36,650,000 ounces of silver, something that's equivalent to about 30% of the free float at the COMEX here. Why do you guys think that this is, that these contracts are starting to, or are really trying to stand for delivery now? Is this a somewhat of a newer market development?
Happy to go first. So first of all, just a clarification. I just checked the number right now. The current number of contracts standing for that have been issued like delivery notice and that are standing for delivery is over 11,600. So that it's over like way above 50 million ounces of physical silver. And the unusual part here exactly is that all this contract, because back in October we were in a situation where the silver market was incredibly under stress. But if you go and look back at that time, there were not that many delivery notices being issued and acceptance. So there was big shift in the physical from the COMEX to London, but ultimately the buyers of those contracts didn't follow through. And now we are in a quite a different situation. We are in a situation in which it's December. I mean, I know like it's quite weird for this time of the year to see this type of volume. Usually people are done for this part of the year, and they're mostly like, you know, wrapping their business and starting to look ahead to the following year. So what I believe is happening here right now in the silver market is that there are projections of a significant increase of industrial demand that is mostly coming from Asia. This industrial demand in the form of EVs, solar panel, actually also semiconductors. And these people historically have not been, you know, stacking up a lot of silver ahead of time, because, you know, you need like warehouse space, you need to, you know, handle it in a certain way or whatnot. And before it was fairly efficient to get silver. But I come to a conclusion, and I'm happy to hear what Eric and Paul have to say here, is that these people run the very same calculation that I did. They basically realized that this is going to be the sixth year of deficit in production in the silver market. And when you have years where the demand is stable and growing between 1.2 and 1.3 billion ounces a year, and the production hardly goes beyond 1 billion ounces, you see the COMEX vote, the LBMA vote, so you see all sorts of votes around with physical silver, like getting to a lower and lower level of availability, then you realize you might need to stack in advance in order to secure your production ahead of time. And when you do something like that, you don't order just what you need for the following week or month. You start ordering way larger quantities. And this is reverberating all across the spectrum, with the future market seeing this unusual like amount of contracts standing for delivery in December. And ultimately, despite all the attempt that everyone is familiar with of control the price, it keeps rising no matter what. Because ultimately the physical demand now is in the driving seat. And when you come to a point of the goods not being there, then people scramble to get it somewhere and the rest follows.
Okay, so I agree with Dario. I'm looking at the open interest chart at the COMEX right now, and we are at 154,225 contracts right now. So that's actually a lot lower than the historical high back in 2020 of 200,000 contracts. I mean, so what does that tell me? That tells me that there's actually not a lot of demand for paper silver contracts. But at the same time, we're seeing a lot of demand on physical silver, like what Dario was saying. So we are in a very unique situation this time, because traditionally, when, if you look at the charts, right, when the price of silver rises to a new high in the past, the open interest makes new highs. But this time, the open interest is actually low, comparatively speaking. But the price of silver is making new highs. So that's just on the COMEX side. And then, you know, Dario mentioned the LBMA, the OTC market. Yes, it's not transparent. It's difficult to see what's going on at the LBMA because of its bilateral nature, meaning that those contracts at the LBMA direct, you know, from buyer to seller, they don't need to disclose to the public what is exactly going on. But Robert Gollop came out over the weekend and said that on Friday last week, the lease rate at the LBMA, based on forward contracts to the spot contracts, was at 8%. So, and then after that, I see David Jensen talking about 7 to 9% lease rate. So we're back up now in terms of lease rate at the LBMA. So what does that mean? That means that the physical silver tightness is back at the LBMA, despite the fact that in October, London or the UK imported approximately 2,000 metric tons of silver, most of which was from the US, potentially, you know, from the COMEX belts. So where are we at now? We see a lot of daily paper silver slams at the COMEX. Theoretically, when they do that, they have to offset that by buying long contracts at the LBMA. That's how they do their, you know, EFP basis trades. They buy a short at the COMEX and then they hash that, put quotation marks, at the LBMA for long. But the problem I see here is that if they're doing that, is there enough silver, physical silver, at the LBMA if the physical demand at the COMEX spikes, let's say in the next delivery month in March, then what happens? You got all these guys holding, you know, these promissory notes at the LBMA for delivery, and they are thinking that they can repeat what happened in October, which is, you know, sucking all this physical silver from the COMEX or, you know, potentially from China, but they can't do it, you know, via China anymore, because China is implementing export silver, physical silver export control starting January 2026.
And that I think is very symptomatic of them, of, you know, wanting to make sure that you have enough silver to be able to produce the products that you have, right?
I agree with that, Tom. I mean, people ask me, they look at, you know, I posted something on my X account recently. There's this one physical silver distributor in China. They are a Shanghai Gold Exchange member. So they withdrew 10 tons, let's just say 10 tons of silver, because they on their Red Note account, they said that they sold 5 metric tons of silver within several days. And people ask me, you know, a lot of people from the West on X ask me, who are they selling the silver to? Who are these guys who are lining up for silver? And I answered, a lot of them, some of them may be investors, but a lot of them are actually small, medium-sized industrial users of silver. Because as you guys know, silver is used in many industrial applications, like solar power, electronics, you know, EVs, etc. And also, there are actually a lot of silver jewelry manufacturers, like, you know, where Dario went over the weekend in China, Shebei. That's where they sell all the silver jewelry. So my understanding is that with the especially with the silver jewelry guys, because of the high premiums that they charge, sometimes they charge up to 100% premium for silver jewelry, they are not as price sensitive as maybe, you know, some of these other industrial users, potentially. So a lot of them, you know, looking at the price of silver going from, let's say, $40 to $60, they really are more concerned about the availability of the physical silver.
Dario, I wanted to ask you about the recent cooling outage experienced by the CME. You know, how did that play out? And do you think that this, there's a possibility that this, I mean, putting our, let's say, tinfoil hats on, is there a possibility that that has something to do with the demand for silver as well at this point?
Thanks a lot for the question, and 100%. I mean, that event, for lack of better words, was the most ridiculous thing I've seen in quite some times, personally speaking. And it was hilarious because, yeah, in Asia it was already a Friday. So we wake up in the morning, it was Thanksgiving night in the US. I mean, everyone that is in the market knows, or spent time in the market knows that Thanksgiving Day, along with Christmas Day, New Year Eve, maybe Easter to a certain extent, are very low trading, low volume type of activity days. And I remember vividly, I was, you know, I was doing like my morning routine, checking things around. And then I start to see something weird happening on silver future. And, you know, first block, boom, price up, second block, price up, third block. And then there was a level, and the level was 54. And that level was exactly the level that stood before, after which it would have like broke out. And in the exact moment, the price is 54. The trading stops. And you have this announcement from CME, that is the owner of COMEX, that they halt trading on commodities. And shortly after, not immediately, shortly after, they halt trading everywhere. And I mean, honestly speaking, the first thing they come out with is like, oh, we have outage problem. Okay, well, a bit unusual. What kind of outage? We have cooling problems to the servers. come on, man, are you serious? I mean, the first thing that you go check is the temperature in the location of the server. And in Aurora, Illinois, I remember at that time, like, the temperature was about 0 degrees Celsius. So to put some things in context for the audience, we are talking about like tier one type military grade servers with multiple redundant facilities that are able to operate to a level of processing of information that goes down to like milliseconds, okay? So very high frequency trading. And hilariously, that specific facility that they mentioned, it even has, I mean, it's not a joke, but they can open the door if there is a heating problem and cool it down. I mean, it's literally a feature of that specific facility. They can allow external air circulation within infrastructure in order to cool down the servers. Okay. And then, you know, we are here in Asia. Everyone is having their Thanksgiving dinner. Like, people are like, the last thing that they look at is a silver chart at that time. But we were here in Asia. We were awake. It was me, Eric, and other people. And we're like, what the hell? And then, okay, assuming everything goes wrong, like, you cannot even open the window. They're all locked for whatever reason. Everyone that worked in a financial institution knows that by regulation, you need to have redundancy facility at a safe distance, physically speaking, from the one that you operate your main activities in order to resume your normal course of operations very quickly. In the matters, ideally, of hours. But in this case, we're talking about servers. I mean, they could have literally turned on the servers. I believe the redundancy facility are in New York. And they didn't. Okay. And, you know, this goes on for 10 hours. I'm not talking about few minutes. I'm not talking about 1 hour. I mean, we have seen some AWS, Cloudflare, and whatever type of outages. Okay. They get resolved quickly. This goes on for 10 hours and resumes in the exact moment. I mean, what are the chances that you resume operations at 8:30 a.m. Central Time in the U.S., that is exact time when the daily operation at the Federal Reserve of New York for lending of liquidity to the Standing Repo facility closes? That day was also a settlement day. And just like that, there were like $26 billion of fresh liquidity circulating into the system, and everything resumes. Fast forward, a few weeks later, it comes out that, of course, the following day, comes out that there was delivery notice for the contracts that you mentioned, 7,330 contracts, that Thanksgiving day. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are the chances that that large amount of silver is being put at delivery that day? And then further investigation shows that there was a very interesting, coincidentally, movement in JP Morgan physical silver amount held at the COMEX from registered to eligible, about 13 million ounces. And then, on top of this, it came out that allegedly negotiations have been going on, coincidentally, again, because we totally believe that there was a cooling issues at 0 degrees Celsius in the middle of Illinois at Thanksgiving night. There was negotiation among brokers, banks, in order to handle a very large request of physical settlement that they received exactly at that time. So, answer to your question is that incident was, I mean, it was obviously, I mean, they pulled the plug and they needed time to reconvene and handle whatever it was going on. They could have found a better excuse. To be fair, usually in this kind of situation, they claim that there is a hacking or a Russian hacker. You know, Russian are like parsley in food. You can put it them anywhere and everyone like enjoys the flavor. Ah, yes, the Russian, they hacked the CME. They could have come with a better excuse, but
I mean, these are the facts. I leave to the people to believe or not that public statement.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, you and I were chatting on WhatsApp the other day about the margin raising by the Shanghai Physical Exchange as well. Was this something that is out of the ordinary? And what was the absolute, let's say, the absolute level of the margin raise, and what effect did that actually have on the market as well?
Well, I think it's worth going back first just briefly to what happened on that Friday when it was very clear that they raised the margin at the CME. And for me, I sat there, as I said to you via WhatsApp, Tom, that it was obvious the price was going to get smashed. It was a statement for me of the obvious, and what a surprise it happened. And the whole point is that's an attempt, obviously, to try and flush out some longs who may potentially stand for delivery, because, you know, I granted that we're not at record highs in terms of open interest, but this has to be all predicated on the fact that the amount of physical demand globally is increasing, and it is a big, huge picture we have to look at. Therefore, cumulatively, there is more strain now on in terms of the demand for physical delivery relatively than we've seen. I'm no expert on every year of physical demand and delivery with regards to the COMEX, but if you add it all together, it makes and creates intolerable strain for in regards to the COMEX and the LBMA. Now, with regards to China, yeah, the rates seem to be rise extremely sharply. Initially, it had absolutely no effect, but the argument is it now having an effect? We've seen overnight, as Dario points out, where they pushed it too far, whoever they are, and silver's now in backwardation, which creates all the problems they had previously, in that they kept trying to smash the price from 54 to 46, and it was just permanently in backwardation then. And of course, in the end, they got it out of backwardation. But with regards to China, a lot of it is more to do with trying to flush out speculation. They are trying to not encourage that kind of behavior. And it's not uniquely the case recently. But in the end, what this ultimately boils down to is physical demand globally and collectively is enormous. And I put out a thing, and it's a bit nerdy and techy and scientific, but in very simple terms, I made the point that silver is used in contact soldering, bonding, conductive paste. Why? Because high conductivity is crucial. Semiconductors need this. And they use silver in contacts and connections because obviously it efficiently transmits electrical currents. Now, yeah, we can go on and on about it, but why am I mentioning this? Because China is going to massively increase its semiconductor production thanks to the United States for years trying to crush China by restricting their access to semiconductor markets. So the physical demand in China is going to increase. Now, the argument is, well, if they're producing semiconductors somewhere else isn't, well, that's not the case anymore, because if you look around the global South countries, the demand to industrialize with modern technologies is growing also. So at the end of the day, this is what is putting all these strains on the market. So there is always going to be a desire and attempt to try and, on occasion, smash the price. But the problem is, and we've seen this, where there's often these smashes overnight, what I would say, US and European time, obviously happening in Asian time. Now, I can't profess to understand precisely what goes on with regards to the markets in Shanghai. But what I do know is there is a big edict coming out of Beijing to say we want to eliminate as much of this speculation in silver as possible. But they're not going to sit there and restrict people's capability to buy physical metal. That is not the case. And it comes back to the point with Shanghai. It's a one-to-one contract basis. I know it's not an ounce to an ounce, but I always reduce it to that. Well, that is most certainly not the case in the West, but there are clearly speculators who are trying to short in Shanghai or in Asia, and they're trying to put a squeeze on that. And that's understandably the case. And we, you know, and I think that accounts for why they significantly increase the margin. It's very different from what's happening in the West, that when they do that, that is to tamper people from having contracts and demanding physical delivery, whether it's in December and it's 50 odd million ounces, or currently in March, and that doesn't mean that everyone's going to stand for delivery, but it's about 600 million ounces now. Even if 20% stand for delivery, they're in enormous world of pain to try and manage that in March. Even if it's 10%, it might be a big problem. So they're very different markets and very different worlds, but ultimately, from China's perspective, they want to tamper down this wanton speculation. And that's a sort of edict that comes out across all markets.
So Paul, what was the, again, just to go back and underscore that, what was the margin requirement at the time and what did they raise it to?
I don't know the figures off the top of my head. It's not, to be honest, it's not that important because I don't play in those markets. I think there was claim that went as high as 26%. I'm sure Eric or Daria will know that better than I do, but the point is they significantly hiked it, and it was to try and flush out the speculation, which is paper speculation. Now, okay, there is also, I've had a lot of conflicting comments given to me coming out of China recently, which is a whole separate story, and we don't need to get into it, but as to what's actually going on. But for me, it's very simple. They just want to flush out that kind of paper speculation. Now, that might have absolutely no bearing on actually influencing, depends to the extent to which the margins applied and how people are trading. But for me, what is more interesting and always has been is what's going on with physical delivery globally. Where's the physical demand? How much is that demand in relation to what we can understand the COMEX LBMA behave? And, you know, it's not a secret, but I probably on a weekly basis, I have Chinese industrials phoning me, offering me a price to buy all my silver. And that has never stopped in the last 12 months. I had a call last Friday. There'll be someone calling again. This Friday, they always offer me a premium to current spot price, but I'm not selling it. But it goes back to the point that there is huge demand, not just from what people would regard to be traditional industry, but also small, medium enterprises. Why? Because physical demand is going to grow and accelerate in China, but also in the rest of the global South countries, but also don't underestimate the amount of silver that Russia imports. It's enormous. And it's going to increase in the future because Russia's becoming a country that is now, because of the Ukraine war, undertook import substitution. They're now starting to manufacture, okay, some very low-end semiconductors, but they're going to need silver as an example, and they're industrializing with modern technologies. The same principle. So, because there's this big industrialization move, then more and more silver is going to be in demand from what I would say east of the Urals and south. And that is going to increasingly put strain in the Western markets because there is no doubt there are individuals, there are institutions who are going to the likes of the COMEX, putting enormous orders in, and they're steadfastly saying, I want physical delivery. And they're not prepared to be palmed off with some excuse or some rationale. Why don't you just settle in cash? They want physical delivery. And some may argue that's deliberate or intentional. Well, maybe it is or maybe it isn't. But again, it just increases the enormous strain that's happening in physical markets. And for me, whatever goes on in paper markets is of no real interest. And I'll explain why. Because do I trust any of the data I see? No. And there's also the enormous opaque market where most of silver tonnages changes hands. That data's not available. So it's a reference point and it's a benchmark. But for me, I could have spent years looking at this and it doesn't tell me anything. And we've had all false dawns in the past. And for me, I sat there and went, no, we're not going to see true price discovery. We're on the cusp of that, but we're not in a position where that's exactly a reality. Now, even though people will look at the price of gold and silver and go, well, surely we're there. Well, we're a step in the right direction, but we're nowhere near there for me.
You mentioned the word backwardation a little while ago, and obviously that means that the spot price is higher than the futures price. How is that also affecting demand, and does this keep kind of actually providing or driving more demand into the market as well?
Well, the first point with backwardation is clearly it's indicative of physical shortages. I mean, it irrefutably, and it just adds to the overall picture that there are physical shortages globally. Now, that can be for different reasons. Some of it can be industrial based. Some of it could be the COMEX is trying to, or whoever is trying to settle contracts, and they've got a shortage, and maybe London's got a shortage and they're playing musical chairs and shifting whatever around to try and plug gaps all over the place. But the question is, in the mindset of those sat in London or New York, if once it goes into backwardation, I mean, it depends what people's perspective is in with regards to exchange for physical. And that, as Eric rightly says, that completely upends that market. Does it encourage more buying? Well, I think what probably encourages more buying is the fact rather that every time it ends up in backwardation, they've smashed the price. And when the price falls, then it's encouraging more physical buying. I mean, the question is, what do people perceive the price of silver to be or should be in the future? And I'm not interested in what the price is per se. That might sound bizarre, but for me, it's what silver will be in terms of purchasing power in the future and relative to our other assets, then that's when it's of interest. But if people have a perception that silver should be a lot higher and they're looking at the current price, then the only thing, it might dissuade some people because they've sat there going, well, if there's physical shortages, am I going to be able to have physical delivery or am I going to be have to settle in cash? So I can't speak for people's individual tastes and what goes through their mind with regards to trading silver. I mean, I've never sold an ounce, and the day I do is when I sell the lot, and that won't be anytime soon. So my outlook and perspective on this is very different, but there might be people who certainly, when there's a price smash, will see this as an opportunity because they believe the momentum is that the price is going to keep rising for the time being.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've talked a lot about, let's say, Russia and China, as you mentioned, east of the Urals, but India is also demanding massive physical deliveries as well now, with the advent of the pension funds adding silver to their demand picture, right?
Yeah, shall I give way? I seem to be dominating the conversation, so let's give way to someone else.
Yeah, guys, feel free to jump in here as well, Dario and Eric.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the closing price today, December 16th, 2025, of the silver price at the Shanghai Gold Exchange and the Shanghai Futures Exchange. Again, for silver. So SGE silver price closed at $64.73 US dollars per troy ounce equivalent. These they don't use US dollars, nor do they use troy ounce to measure. So we converted it, or buy converted it, the numbers is 64.73 US dollars per troy ounce. For the Shanghai Futures Exchange silver price is 64.80 US dollars per troy ounce equivalent. So what are we seeing here? We're seeing that there's a very small, you know, price differential between the silver futures and the silver spot price in China. It's the same. It's actually the same thing at the LBMA and versus the COMEX silver price right now, the front month as well. It's almost at parity. So, I mean, my conclusion is that I guess whoever's in control, the bankers, bullion banks, whatever, they are successful in the sense that there's probably not a lot of speculative money out there right now leveraged up on the long side on paper silver. I mean, it shows, right? On the open interest figures that I shared with your audience today. So what I'm saying is that this is increasingly becoming a physically driven market, as Paul and Dario both said today. So, I mean, if I'm looking at this at every angle, I don't see how the price appreciation of silver is going to stop anytime soon until, you know, the price is high enough so that some of these physical silver holders are willing to sell the silver back into circulation so that the global free float of physical silver is back to a, you know, higher level where the, you know, places like the LBMA or even the Shanghai Gold Exchange right now, because it's at, even though it bounced up back a bit, is a physical silver free float is at historical lows. So again, I don't see how this situation is going to be alleviated until the price of silver is substantially higher, where physical silver holders willing to sell their physical silver back into circulation so that, you know, for lack of a better word, liquidity, a physical silver liquidity is back up at a global scale. So that's what I see.
Well, it definitely seems like price is going to sort out a lot of the issues, both with supply and demand, right? And once that, let's say, parity level is reached, then I think we'll see a lot more stability in the silver market. But until then, we're going to see a lot of volatility, both up and down.
Actually, if I'm interject here, I have an interesting point I want to make, actually a couple of points. There is a very peculiar thing happening in the silver market right now as well. Virtually, and broadly speaking, of course, especially in the West, there is almost no interest for silver compared to other assets as an investment, or interest in general, so to speak. You can quickly check this, like, going on Google Trends and looking for worldwide data stat or United States data stats. I did it. I posted this on X. And you see that compared to gold, the interest on silver is minimal. And hilariously, like, the people I talk to, and they, unless they are, like, you know, physical silver stockers as well or whatever, like, they don't trust silver as an investment because every time it crashes, every time, like, there is a crisis or whatever of exogenous happening in the market, it doesn't hold. And they don't realize how this is structurally changing. And I would like to say, to point this out, to remark what Eric said, like, this is all we are seeing right now in this market. It's nothing to do with retail, but far from it. What we're seeing right now, it's growing, if not almost snowballing, perhaps to a certain extent, industrial demand. And the thing that should make people think is the hoarding attitude that some large corporates are having these days. I mean, look at what happened with the GPUs, look at what happened with
memories lately with the prices going up 400%, simply because they're, you know, getting all their ends to whatever they can grab. But if you come to a point that these people are not going to have the commodities, the bare material, including silver, in order to produce whatever they need, the possibility of a hoarding behavior in order to front run a potential supply crunch that is not going to end anytime soon. Like silver mining companies have been so hammered by silver prices being artificially low for so long that many of the major companies, they to stay in operation, they diversified their activity in extracting other commodities like gold, aluminium, or even copper. So you can hardly find like a major silver company that is fully dedicated to just extract silver. And on their side, there is this regency bias of the price ultimately being manipulated or staying manipulated and becoming uneconomical for them if they start like expanding their production, and ultimately the cost of that production might not be covered in the long term by a price that remains sticky above to a certain level. So you are having supply crunch that is gonna persist. And at some point, as Eric said, I mean, the price needs to go up to an extent that people that hold the physical, that are not part of the industrial space, but they're like companies and private holders, they will say, okay, at this price, I am a seller and I can start liquidating some, so you can have liquidity entering the market. But also it's incredibly underappreciated how there is no broad, let's call it broad acceptance from the retail space of silver as a, to till this point, as a trustworthy investment opportunity, as a edge to inflation and whatnot, like compared to the likes of gold. And I want to quote Eric on this because I watched one of his interviews and I really loved it. He said, higher prices will change this attitude to a point that if the price of silver gets high enough, it can even become reserve assets for central banks, because at the moment the problem is that it's too cheap. So you need to, it takes like a lot of space to store. However, if it starts getting to the level where it should be and inflation adjusted, the silver price all-time high, if I'm not wrong, is currently like $195. If it gets that there or beyond, silver as a precious metal will start also to become alternative opportunity for large central banks type of institutional monetary institution as a reserve asset, ultimately drop in volatility and find that equilibrium that was never able to achieve in modern times, especially after the stigma of the Hunt Brothers squeeze.
Yeah, it's interesting to consider companies and, you know, people that need silver trying to secure supply. I mean, I mentioned at the top of the show this bombshell that, maybe it's a bombshell, that Samsung just came out with their solid state battery, perhaps requiring up to a kilogram of silver per vehicle, per EV. And they've now moved to have a direct offtake agreement with a silver mine in Mexico. And that to me just, you know, shortcutting the exchanges and going directly to miners shows the case that I have talked about with people before. You know, many years ago, at some point, we're going to start getting to these situations where, you know, finished product companies or fabricators are going to start going to directly to miners instead of relying on exchanges, because supply is going to get so tight at some point that they're not going to want to stop producing their finished goods. they'd rather have a more reliable supply. And I think this is a perfect symptom of that, right?
Yeah, it hugely is, because I can give some background. I was involved in mining operations and mergers, acquisitions, and hunting silver mines all over the world and on behalf of clients. And there was a huge demand for people to try and find these mines or access to these mines so they can buy doré or concentrate or whatever, or actual physical silver. And for precisely that reason, they want to bypass traditional markets. And it might be worth very briefly, I'm not going to go into masses of detail because each section is huge, but if you look at the industrial demand, and it is electronics, of course, but it's also power grids, you know, energy, solar panels, you have chemical and industrial processing, it's in the medical profession, in transportation and the automotive sector. We talked about soldering alloys, etc. It's in mirrors, optics. It's even used in consumer industrial units. The list is endless. And that demand, it's one thing talking about us in the West who like to sit there and believe we're so terribly industrialized and advanced compared to other parts of the world, which is nonsense. But you imagine as more and more continents, look at Africa, for example, it's going to go through a huge industrial revolution, and the demand for silver there that isn't currently there, but will hugely be the case in the future. And this is why, and Eric and I have spoken about this previously, when Xi was on his little tour of South America a few years ago, and they were going everywhere looking, you know, at mining operations, and they sent him as the, you know, the figurehead of the country. And China's been scouring the world for a very long time and is trying to buy up all these assets, because they know ultimately the demand for silver is going to be enormous. And it's the same not with India, you mentioned, absolutely the case. But it is true, and Eric's right with regards to the price of silver. There will come a point where, because the deficit is so huge, they're going to have to say, okay, well, how are we going to get people to start selling? Well, you have to raise the price. But also, there's the argument, when does it become economically viable to have mass recycling operations? Well, not at this price. Some recycling does happen, but we're going to end up having to have huge recycling operations, because the question is, and I'm not making forecasts and saying silver's going to run out in next year, that'd be nonsense, but where are the new silver deposits? I'm not doubting there are probably silver deposits in the world that are going to be exploited in the coming decade that are, as far as everyone's concerned, don't exist now, but how many of them are there? What can we realistically add to the global production levels to try and offset this deficit, bearing in mind this massive demand going forward? And the question is, at some point, even though the West is deindustrializing to an alarming extent, they're even going to have to industrialize at some point. How that happens is not for a discussion today. But the overall picture is there's going to be enormous demand, and you have to price the market on the basis. I mean, I'm not making this about me, but someone actually will come to me one day, a Chinese industrial, and give me a price, and I'll say, yeah, I'll take it. I do have a price in mind, but that's not for public consumption. But if they came and offered me that price, I'd take it. And the same applies to, you know, but if to whoever else, big holders or whatever the situation is. So, but if you're currently at $63 an ounce, for argument's sake, which it roughly is, there's going to be a lot of holders there who are going to say no, because I see where this is going. You know, I started buying silver 20 years ago on the basis that I looked long term, where I projected where we were going to go technologically, and therefore it was about industrial demand. But Eric's right, if the price gets high enough, then it might start to be perceived again as a monetary metal. And I know I've had some conversations with people who are telling me about central banks globally buying them. It's probably not wise to say who, because I can't verify whether that's the case or not, but you know, what are they buying it for? Is it like the Russians who now have a strategic reserve? The United States does that, not good luck the US trying to buy physical silver, because from what was said to me, everywhere they go in the world, someone says, sorry, the Chinese are here already, basically. Or and therefore, but the demand will grow, and but the price has to reflect it. So ultimately, where does this go? Well, that remains to be seen. But you know, it's like when people say you can't back a currency with gold. Well, you can. It just makes the gold price high enough. And you know, I mean, that's a bit simplistic, but ultimately the same applies to the silver markets. If the price is high enough, then you will start to have liquidity. You'll have a normally functioning market, and silver price will become relatively stable. And then that ties in with then people looking at it. Maybe then, if the price is high enough, then the concept of a monetary metal again isn't as outrageous as it might sound to some people.
So guys, looking a little bit more forward here, let's just kind of underline pieces of the market that are going to be showing stress, and everybody feel free to jump in here. Maybe Eric, we'll start with you. Is it lease rates? Is it open interest? Is it free float? Like what are some of the things that we want to be watching for that is continuing to, or to the symptoms that are showing continued stress within the market?
Okay. So the first thing you'll probably see is the lease rates. Local London at the LBMA is going to shoot up probably above 10% once we hit a situation where it's similar to what happened in October. Okay. Like where the LBMA is at almost zero free float of physical silver. So the lease rate again is probably going to shoot up above 10%. And then the next thing we'll probably see is backwardation in China. So that means the Shanghai Gold Exchange silver price is a lot higher than the Shanghai Futures Exchange silver price. So that's the second thing we'll see. And then the next thing we'll see is like what Dario said, we'll probably hear some news of some janitor tripping over a cable at the COMEX. Okay. So like, all these things can happen all at once. Okay. I just want to add though, like in China, the current situation is as such is that, because I have a pretty big following on Red Note. That's like the biggest social media platform in China, like X. And what I'm noticing is that the people who are paper leveraged right now in China are predominantly the naked paper silver shorts. Okay. So you might be surprised, but there are actually a lot of people in China who want to, you know, have exposure to the silver price, but they want to go short, you see, because they are looking at that chart of silver and they're thinking to themselves, you know, it's time for the silver price to dump bait. So they would go on the Shanghai Futures Exchange and they would go leveraged shorts silver. Whereas with the laws, okay, like people who are actually bullish the silver price or the potential price increase of silver, I see a lot of those guys actually trying to buy the physical silver because they realize that even let's say if silver gets to $100 US dollars per troy ounce in 2026, a lot of these people realize that we're probably not going to go there in a straight line. There's probably going to be a lot of volatility with the price of silver between now and $100 silver. So a lot of these people, if they're investors, they rather hold the physical silver bars. In some cases, they're buying the actual 15 kilogram Shanghai Gold Exchange good delivery silver bars for investment purposes. In other cases, like I said, these are just industrials, like jewelry makers, and they're saying, well, you know, it, we might get to 100, get to 150. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to buy what I need for the next 6 months. So they're buying the physical silver. They're going long in that sense. So that's what I'm seeing. Whereas, like, I guess what Paul mentioned, a lot less people in China trying to hedge at the futures exchange now. And you can tell by the numbers, like, I mean, you can tell because I just shared today on Exacon that the SHFE silver price and the SGE silver price are almost at parity. So they're almost the same now, okay, with no arbitrage between the two, which means people rather have the physical silver in their hand.
Yeah, that completely makes sense there. Dario, do you have anything to add there for symptoms of more market stress?
Well, actually, I wanted to mention all Eric said, but there is one more thing I want to bring some attention. Actually, yesterday, I put out, like, I usually don't do this because usually after I write something or I put out a piece of research, then you kind of write about something like new on the same topic every day, you know. But I noticed something very interesting and very, very unusual, because the commodity market, especially in the option market, isn't used to have extreme positioning in the very short-term part of the curve, especially on the upside. I mean, eventually, like, people expect, like, prices of gold, silver, whatever commodity to crash rather than to skyrocket. So they tend to go to grind higher, and then, you know, they get dumped. But there is something incredibly unusual right now, and clearly that's not the type of positioning you will find from the restate space because of how it plays out. So at the COMEX, for quite some times now, for quite several weeks, there is a significant amount of American call option on silver future open interest with expiry February 26, that remarkably has been sitting at $80 and $85 strike for more than 7,000 and 6,000 open interest contract for several weeks. And of course, these options now are more valuable, but what is weird, let's say weird, is how deep out of the money and how close the expiry of these options are. That is, you know, you only buy with such a strong, you only put a position in the option market with such a strong conviction only if you have, I wouldn't say the certainty, but the very strong gut feeling that an event is going to occur. And then the other unusual thing right now is on SLV, for example, back in October, during when the silver price was in backwardation and the spread was worsening and it was the crisis at LBMA and so on, something happened on the SLV. SLV is the iShares Silver Trust ETF, where all the physical silver that is supposed to back that ETF is allegedly, I always say, use this word because likewise, Eric, I don't trust those numbers at all, is allegedly held in the vaults of the LBMA. And back in October, SLV was heavily shorted. I mean, one day, if I'm not wrong, like the short interest rate to borrow share and short was like almost 20%. And there were no shares available. Now we are, the price is almost $10 higher. And over the past week, despite like people claiming all the chart is overbought, whatever, and all these things, there have been no shorts, not only no shorts whatsoever put in place, but the total amount of short interest on that specific ETF is remarkably low. It can be covered in a single day. And if this wasn't enough already, I put out there today, I'm like, out of curiosity, I checked the, because usually, to be fair, I don't check much the silver ETFs space, you know, those that claim to be physical silver, because, you know, till I see like a real audit and a real proof that all the physical bars are really there. Or 101 back in those, I'm not going to trust that. But then I go to check the option market on SLV, the options that are quoted at the Nasdaq. And you see humongous amount. Humongous. Let me get out the numbers for you. An humongous amount of call option on SLV with January 16 expiry. And this call option, I just give you the number, like latest update is 79,159 open interest call option at $60 strike, 31,410 open interest at $65 strike, 68,067 open interest at $70 strike. Just to give you a point of reference, because SLV is trading at a discount compared to the spot price, $70 price is roughly $80 on the spot price of silver to get there. I mean, here we are talking about, like, you know, for every option you buy 100 shares. And here we are talking about, assuming all of this go in the money, it's like 18 million ounces of silver. And there is only one bank that can fetch that silver, that is the custodian, in this JP Morgan in London. And again, if you put all of this together, it's very hard not to think that there are selected institutional players with, of course, significant deep pockets, because these options are not cheap. When you start to buy in these amounts, and when usually, like, you have like few thousand of per interest, so much out of the money, like, they got a bit expensive. So when you have this kind of like positioning on two major fronts, it's, you know, it kind of like rings an alarm bell in my brain and say, are these people, like, they know something, and there might be like a position in advance for a sudden repricing? Or, I don't know, are they edging an extreme amount or whatever? Because that kind of positioning is cannot even be justified with, you know, type of yield harvesting opportunity where you have investors that short calls in order to harvest the premium because they don't believe the price gets there. Usually that happens, doesn't happen that deep out of the money, because there is not much juice if you do that out of the money. Like, if you short call option, the price of those call option gets suppressed, and you don't get much, and you expose yourself to a massive risk. So here, looking at the price of those calls, those were definitely bought. So on top of what Eric said, this is something I noticed that I find personally very interesting. I mean, I'm not here like saying crazy things about where the price should go or potentially go, but, you know, experience told me after all these like years of craziness in the market is that more often than not, this kind of like huge call option out of the money positioning tend to act as a magnet that carry the spot prices towards there. And all along the process, there are many beneficiaries of those that put that trade in place, most notoriously like gamma squeezing effort. So what the hell is going on there? I don't know. I checked other expiry. I checked other maturities. There is nothing at all. Like, if you go beyond, if you go earlier, nothing. Like, between January 16 and February 26 expiry, 2026 expiry at the commas, there is
an incredible large amount of option that will start to be in the money as soon as silver prices goes at 70. And if for whatever reason it runs beyond 80, well, that's going to be a hell of a headache for whoever is on the wrong side of that trade.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dario. And I wanted to touch on that as well. And it's, you know, it's amazing to see those, you know, seemingly very far out of the money call options being placed on SLV. It's just an incredible position to take. And I appreciate you bringing that up. Paul, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on there as part of the stress in the market?
Going to echo what obviously Dario and Eric have said, but just very, it won't take long to go through these points. Just, yeah, the lease rates in London. A great point Eric makes. It'll be interesting, the depreciation in the physical free float, as much as we can understand that in the West. I think you can observe backwardation in China, absolutely, but also in the West. I think watch as we get into March and watch what happens at the COMEX. I think you'll see potentially enormous volume and extreme volatility in silver, when I mean limit up and limit down on a daily, not a, every single day, but it's going to, that could increasingly be the case. I think when China stops silver exports starting and 1st of January next year, watch what happens in the West, or the perception of what might happen in Western markets, as much as we can ascertain what that is. You might start to see more announcements by nations. This is based on conversations that were had with me to do with strategic reserves or physical buying for whatever reason. I always think it's interesting, as much as I don't massively pay attention to, like obviously Dario has just explained, and also Eric, with regards to paper or quasi paper markets, but the arbitrage between the West and the East is always something I think of interest. And yeah, maybe we might have more outages at exchanges. We'll see what happens. Margin hikes are always indicative of huge stresses from, for me, okay, as we said, not so much with China, but in the West, margin hikes, that's, we've got huge physical problems. It's like mayday, mayday. We need to get people to bail on their contracts. And for me, the biggest thing is the opaque markets. And I talk to people in the opaque markets on a regular basis. And what's going on there in terms of, in there were the enormous tonnage exchanges hands, because if that starts to dry up and there are problems there, then that's very indicative of a huge, for want of a better word, I'm not the biggest fan of using the word squeeze in the silver market, but I think March could be a very interesting month with regards to the COMEX, we'll see. But in general, the first quarter of next year could be extremely interesting. And with regards to the paper stuff or quasi paper stuff, then everyone who's listening, you know, I defer to Dario and Eric in this regard. Read what they're saying about it, because they're on the ball with this. They're looking at it all the time. For me, I'm more interested in the physical side, what's going on. Although, of course, I'm not completely immune to not paying attention to some degree with what goes on in paper markets or quasi paper markets, but not that level of granularity as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you, all three of you, very much for contributing to this, really this current situation of the silver market, as well as what is worth watching coming up. Of course, Eric at Eric Young, or sorry, at King Kong 9888 on X, at Dario CPX, or just Dario.com. Dario has some excellent articles there that are a little bit longer form if you want to read those. And of course, London Paul from The Serious Report at The Serious Report, and of course, SeriousReport.com. Paul, any final words to leave our audience with?
No, I think it's, you know, I did an interview on YouTube with a friend who's, well, with a friend of mine who's obviously an asset manager, and we talked about silver and how, you know, the importance of it. And I think it's just something that next year is going to get even far more interesting for all the reasons we've discussed today.
Wonderful. Eric, how about you?
I always tell people that if they're interested in gold and silver, it's never too late to start, and it's always good to dollar cost average on your physical gold and silver purchases. So far it seems to have worked for a lot of people who listened to my advice in the last 2 years.
Absolutely. That's, I think, some excellent advice, Eric. Dario?
Well, one thing I'm like as a closing remark is always remind, you know, people and the listener to become familiar with a subject and a topic before, like, you know, taking whatever decision on their own, because that is important, specifically into the macro space and precious metals like silver and gold and whatever. My suggestion is that they should not approach this as like a casino where they can make like a quick buck or whatever, or try to go super ledger thing. This is a long-term game. It's a marathon. People need to be patient. As Eric said, if you want, it's never late to come in. Dollar cost average, don't stretch yourself. That's the mistake. But at the same time, like, since I've seen like people commenting on my post and whatever, I always have a rule of thumb. If your portfolio and your positions don't make you sleep at night, it means you have too much. And that's not an investment anymore. It's a gamble.
Well said. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll have to do this again.